if we can penetrate into the manufacturing areas and get that data faster, make, you know, that data information faster, it only helps in anything that we're trying to do.
You're tuned in to the Data Masters Podcast. In each episode, we dissect the complexities of data management and discuss the data strategies that fuel innovation, growth, and efficiency. We speak with industry leaders who share how their modern approaches to data management help their organizations succeed. Let's dive straight into today's episode with Anthony Dayton.
Welcome to Data Masters. Today, we're going to dive into the role of data in manufacturing with Tom Ferrucci, Chief Information Officer at Natco Home Group, one of the largest privately owned home furnishing manufacturers in the U.S. Tom has spent over 30 years in IT and digital transformation, implementing large enterprise systems and using data to optimize manufacturing operations. At Natco, he oversees technology strategy, infrastructure, and data management, and he focuses on ensuring that information drives real impact on production efficiency. In this episode, we'll explain and explore how manufacturing as an industry leverages data differently, the convergence of operational and information technology, and how real-time analytics can help navigate supply chain volatility and industry disruptions. Welcome to Data Masters. Excited to have you here.
Anthony, thank you very much for having me on the Data Masters podcast. Looking forward to our discussion.
So I'm excited to dig into manufacturing as an industry because it's something we haven't done before, talked about. And manufacturing is really the backbone of almost any economy. And it's always been a really data-rich environment. But historically, that data was often very siloed, and possibly the role of data in manufacturing is a bit different than other industries. And maybe you can share a little bit, maybe at a high level, how you think about manufacturing as an industry, which is a bit different.
I think you're right on some of those accounts. And, you know, it really is the backbone for a lot of what we're doing here. But I think when you look at through manufacturing, when you penetrate down to the manufacturing floor and you're looking at the warehousing, but especially in the manufacturing areas, the amount of data points that can be collected, can be captured, can be impactful, can generate cost savings and efficiencies. And there are so many areas that it can definitely touch. I think you have the opportunities are almost limitless on what you can do. And you really need to take a look at what is available to you. And of course, prioritizing that, because I think there's a lot of areas that are impactful when you're taking a look at the data that's coming off of a manufacturing floor with people, with process, with, you know, the systems that are integrated on the floor. You mentioned really quickly, but it's an area that I've talked a lot about with many people, is convergence between information technology, where we all sit up here, but then operating technology as it goes down to the floor. So there's many opportunities that can be tapped into.
So I haven't heard this distinction between operational technology and information technology before. Maybe let's be a little sort of precise and careful for listeners, because they may not have that terminology in their mind as well. How do you define operational technology versus information technology?
Yeah, so I think information technology, I think everyone that's going to be listening to this is going to have a pretty clear definition of the information technology infrastructure, the applications, the infrastructure, or whether it's on-premise, cloud-based, and how we manage our data from order to cash, procure to pay, or whatever data that you're managing. But when you're looking at operating our operational technology, it really is working potentially with a group of manufacturing engineers who are designing the processes to make the manufacturing process more streamlined, more efficient. But they're using a lot of tools that are somewhat similar to the tools that we're using. They're programming PLCs, or they're going ahead and putting sensors on equipment. And all of that is generating a lot of data, right? But they're performing a lot of that in a silo, or traditionally had done a lot of that in a silo. And there are instances where you would interact with each other, but it was used to be less and less. But I think there is a lot of convergence between the two. A lot of the equipment we see on the floor is all IP enabled, so you can talk to it over the network. And even more legacy equipment, where the equipment is older and wasn't built like that, there are things like sensors and other devices that you can deploy to start aggregating the data. So the lines are much more blurred than they used to be, less siloed than they used to be. And I think a lot of times that when you converse to it, it can become a very strong and powerful tool for transformation.
So to play that back to you, what I hear you saying is that in manufacturing, almost uniquely, the act of production, of actually doing the work, of running the business, is itself a data-producing and data-driven activity. It is in contrast, perhaps, to a bunch of other businesses, which they capture a lot of data in these IT systems, CRM systems, ERP systems, et cetera. I think the point you're making, again, just tell me if I'm catching this, is that increasingly in manufacturing, the manufacturing process itself is both driven by data, but also producing data. Is that fair?
That's fair. And I think traditionally in the past where we had tapped into it as like barcode data collection systems were for labor tracking or some basic material movement, that's a lot of times where it ended. But really now we can go much deeper into those areas. And the data that is being generated is enormous, right? I think there's a lot of data that has the potential to be tapped into that we traditionally hadn't done as much of in the past or in a very limited way.
So let's talk about that for a second. The amount of data is larger. There's more and more data. Maybe help bracket that for people. And maybe in the context of maybe some examples, real world examples of how you think about it. So just how much data are we talking and what's the type and kind of that data? Maybe even specifically to NACO.
Yeah. So I think for us, it's a lot of data, telemetry data, almost, hey, we have a piece of equipment that is producing X amount of goods on a regular basis. And we are getting readings from that equipment to say, this is how fast we're running. This is how much output is being generated. And that's great. That's good information. But we also know that there is information around downtimes and why machines stop and things like that. And a lot of times, traditionally, that may have been logged on a piece of paper, or it could have been stopped at the manufacturing engineering group, and they may have done some analysis in a spreadsheet, and that would have been the end of it, right? So that was pretty common. But now, when we look at this data, we can say, hey, let's integrate it into some of the other tools that we have available to us to analyze some of the data, whether it's a BI platform, or obviously now AI is a great tool for analyzing lots of data, as long as you have a good data governance and the classification of the data. Those foundational pieces need to be in place first as well, right? We don't want to be sharing anything proprietary with a language model that they shouldn't be. But, you know, assuming those pieces are in place, I think that's the kind of thing that you can leverage when you look at other areas, like in warehousing, right? A lot of times, if you're dealing with retail outlets, retail partners, they want to use certain tools like RFID tagging to move their material throughout the warehouse, which definitely is an issue with compliance. We would see, you know, certain retailers saying that, hey, when, you know, the product comes to us, it has to have an RFID tag so we can identify every piece. So of course you would typically comply with that requirement, but there's also an opportunity there to be able to leverage that for your own purposes, right? So every time that for us, whether it's a rug or a piece of home decor, pillow or something like that is moving through the warehouse, we have the ability to know exactly where it is at any time down to a very granular level. And we're starting to do more and more of that. Again, those are opportunities that are available to us that we always try to think of what are the opportunities that we're missing right now. So, you know, we're always coming up with ideas, right? Some are easier to execute on than others, for sure.
So let's talk a little bit about that how, because what I hear you saying is increasingly in manufacturing, we're generating huge volumes of data. And you said this a few times, but I'll kind of underline it a little bit. We're generating that data in real time. So we know fairly, as you say, a fairly granular level up to the second where raw materials are in the process, where finished goods are in the process, temperatures and vibrations and line efficiencies and movement. And like there's a lot of data being generated in real time. How do you even begin to imagine handling that volume of data in real time, thinking about processing, acting on that information? What are some of the techniques and strategies you put in place for that?
For me, it really is following the business. Where are their pain points? What are they trying to measure? Where do they get the most leverage and with this information, right? So perfect example in some of the cases that I've worked on in the past would be production scrap, right? So you are running a piece of equipment that is running perfectly fine, but then there's something that may occur. And for us, if you're making rugs or in other areas that I've worked in manufacturing, maybe there's a needle break so that something occurs where there's a defect in the material. And you would typically have to wait for an operator to notice that the product was defective shut down the machine, open a ticket with the maintenance crew, and have that repair done. Well, there are ways in the interim between the time it occurred and the time that the operator noticed the problem, you may have generated many feet or pounds or whatever measurement you have of scrap. But if you have a sensor in place, or if you can tap into a PLC that can recognize certain types of breaks in a machine, then you can immediately shut down the machine, and you can build logic into some of that application to say, hey, automatically open a ticket in a CMMS system, a maintenance system for someone that would go and maintain that equipment. So you're generating less scrap. Your mean time to repair, in theory, is going to be much quicker, and your production efficiency will go up. So those are pretty concrete examples of ways that you can impact multiple areas, right? So I think, and that, think about it, if you generate less scrap, you have to order less material in the long run, so it impacts supply chain. So it really does permeate significant areas within the business. And that's one example that I worked on in the past that we do think, you know, you have an impact there. There's, like I said, plenty of opportunities that we're always trying to leverage. And again, and a lot of times your best friends in that area are the people that are running the equipment on the floor, or the manufacturing engineering teams who are either maintaining things offline, or they trying to automate things themselves. And, you know, maybe you're converging some of the data too, like, hey, within the technology side, manufacturing orders are tied to equipment, right? So let's try to take these silos of information and make it even more powerful when you put all the pieces together.
So I think what's really interesting there is this idea of thinking about these business metrics that you'd mentioned, mean time to repair, or waste, or raw materials, or even supply chain inventory, things like that. These are not traditional data metrics, like things like that. They're really business metrics. And you're creating a tight linkage between business operations and the kinds of data that you're drawing off the production line, and then mapping kind of directly to those business metrics.
Experience Tamer's proven data-centric AI, engineered to speed the discovery, enrichment, and maintenance of the golden records businesses need to accelerate growth. Tamer's expertise in quickly and accurately unifying large amounts of data across disparate sources gets results faster at a lower cost compared to traditional master data management or DIY solutions. Stop wasting time on bad data. Visit www.tamer.com, that's TAMR.com, to see results now.
You made this point, again, I'll kind of highlight it, that your business partners see great value in that. But I might suggest that the reason they see value in that is that you've tied the data initiative directly to something they care deeply about. For example, mean time to repair, like how long a machine is out of production, like not available to work. Like those are things that the business, for lack of a better term, like the business really cares about. And so making those data initiatives really connected deeply to the, in this example, the operational efficiency of that business, that's a great way to build momentum and excitement around data projects. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's accurate, right? And I think a great way to start is to take a look at what the business thinks is important, but maybe something that would be a quicker win to prove your concept, right? I think that's an area. Maybe you can see the vision, the bigger project or the bigger approach to this would be a long-term. But if you can get some smaller wins with impactful data that they hadn't really thought of analyzing in a way that you can analyze, or the velocity at which you can analyze it, right? So that's a big piece of it too, right? I think with the manufacturing, obviously we see a lot of the global change in the way things are being manufacturing, low cost areas versus maybe domestic manufacturing. But if you can leverage velocity, if you can make things faster, more efficient, right, that's a good way to potentially offset some of the other challenges that are faced when you're looking at global manufacturing.
So let's talk about that actually, because I think traditionally we've thought of manufacturing as a stable, reliable industry that everybody understands, and maybe a little boring, if you might say it that way. But it feels like in the last few months, manufacturing, and in particular domestic manufacturing, has been anything but. There's been tremendous supply chain disruptions. There are tariffs that are on and off. There's a lot of global uncertainty. Things seem to be changing all the time. So we've talked a lot about how you use data to drive operational efficiency in the production process. But cast your eye out a little bit. How have you been thinking about managing in what must feel like a much less predictable economic environment.
I think you're right. I think we all love predictability, right? And when things become uncertain, uncertainty, it always makes people nervous, right? So I think the more that you can show that you have value in the data, or you're making continuous improvement based on hard evidence on some of the data, that maybe helps in some regard. But obviously, the level of volatility or change is rapidly evolving, right? I think the pace of change we can all agree on is much more faster than we've all seen in the past. So I think our ability to react faster is impactful. I think if we can penetrate into the manufacturing areas and get that data faster, make, you know, that data information faster, it only helps in anything that we're trying to do. And a lot of what you're saying too, we still do import quite a bit as well. So I think that's an area, you know, supply chain, that's another area where we try to have some impact as well. So you're taking a look, it's obviously manufacturing domestically. We're really still trying to take that a similar approach in other areas. Like I said, with supply chain, I think trying to have better decisions, more predictability, which is also another area of somewhat of volatile, well, somewhat volatility. And there's obviously a lot occurring there as well, that every day you're watching and something seems to change.
Is there an opportunity to think, we talked at the beginning, data being in silos, is part of the opportunity here kind of breaking those silos down and thinking about matching or mapping data that's occurring on a production process with more broad trends in a market or a supply chain, with like where you could be sourcing materials from? I'm curious about this linkage between really high velocity, real time, very local data, very, very much literally in the machine, to these broader systemic changes that are happening across markets or suppliers, or even thinking about it from a sales perspective, what's in demand? I mean, I'm sure the fashion industry thing, trends and ideas change all the time. How do you think about that linkage?
We try to look beyond the transactional data or maybe the master data that we have in our system and try to really figure out the complementary data for some of that. So I think the area that I can probably talk the most about would be with supply chain, right? So obviously, we are managing a significant supply chain, both importing raw materials, some finished products from various countries around the globe. And probably up until 2020, things were somewhat predictable, somewhat stable. I think COVID, of course, I think threw a lot of volatility and lack of stability. There's still a significant amount more than there ever was before. And we still manage them internally a lot of the same ways. We hope we're better at it. We hope our system's gotten a little bit stronger. But where I've taken an approach here is maybe looking at some of the complementary data. So we know what we're ordering from our suppliers. We know when we expect to get it in. We do have transportation management systems that manage the amount of time, say a shipment container's on the water for 4 weeks or 6 weeks, depending on where it's going to go. But let's take a look at some of the supporting data around that, things that we typically hadn't tracked before. You know, let's take a look at GPS data that gives us more insight into where the product is. The customer wants to know when the product is going to hit their door, right? They don't really care about some of the mechanics of it, but we can take a look at those kinds of data. We take a look at data. We actually tapped into some open source weather data to see what kind of impact that would have, not just on shipping, ocean container shipping, but also with the trucking and how we're scheduling deliveries and how we manage that. And then we also tapped into some of the ocean ports and what kind of data they have there. A lot of times you will see, especially after COVID, there's congestion around these ports. So, hey, my ship made it into port on April 1st, but by the way, you have 8 days of congestion. So you just lost a week. So we try to converge this complementary data into one pane of glass for my team to review, for our systems to evaluate, to hopefully make some better decisions on, or in a worst case is deliver news to the end customer that, hey, this is what's going to happen based on these factors. Where a lot of times that may have all been done separately in silos, maybe managed in a spreadsheet. We're really trying to converge it into a single piece of information from the beginning to the end, the best that we possibly can.
I think that's a great example of thinking about kind of proactively bringing all kinds of sources to get data together, getting that, I'll put words in your mouth, but a 360 view of the shipment.
Well, it's funny. That's actually the term we use with some of the dashboarding. It's called the 360 views, because that's exactly the approach we take. That's in the exact terminology we use.
Perfect. Yeah. Then that becomes a real competitive advantage. So people want to do business with you because they know even if there's a hiccup, you're going to be the one that's proactively reaching out and not being, you know, trying to reverse engineer why something's late when it's 3 days late. You're telling them a week ahead to be prepared that there may be a disruption. That's again, a powerful differentiator based very much on your data strategy.
We do hope. It's a competitive advantage too. I think that's, you said the key word right there. A lot of people think about us, and when they think about NACO, hopefully they're thinking they see us trying to progress and move forward and go beyond the traditional approach to data.
So in that spirit, cast your eye forward. Where do you see the big opportunities for manufacturers in the future? And how would you like to see the data landscape evolve and the business evolve? And your answer must include the term AI, or it's not buzzword complete. No, I'm curious. In all seriousness, how do you think about the future of data in the manufacturing industry?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's really the direction everyone who's trying to figure out how to take advantage of that. And same, we're in that same boat. We're definitely doing some things in that area that are beyond proof of concept, but are still, I would consider them to be in the infancy stage where we're really trying to figure out the best approach to some of this and what tools to use. And again, a lot of it goes back to the foundational work that we have done with data classification and data governance, right? A lot of times, if you struggle in those areas, maybe I'm going to be more efficient in getting you the wrong answer, which is not what we want, right? So I think you're right with the pace of change here is even faster than anything else. And just trying to keep up with that. What are we not uncovering, or what can these tools uncover for us that will be that next leap with the competitive advantage, or that next leap in how we manage the data, how we look at it, that we get insights and information and decisions being made on things that we thought were either too hard to get, we didn't think about getting, or it was just something that didn't really hit our radar.
That's cool. Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. Well, Tom, I appreciate you spending some time with us. It's really interesting to think about how data can provide competitive advantage in the manufacturing industry. I love this idea of linking data about the business with data produced by the business, as it were, like the actual act of manufacturing. And it does sound like a really interesting challenge because it's really a huge volume of data, but really can be a source of competitive advantage for you in the industry. And I think that's maybe not what people would have expected out of this industry.
Yeah, no, manufacturing, you know, you're right. You know, maybe some people may think it's more mundane or, you know, not, but there really is a lot of opportunity. And it's actually very interesting to be a part of this process. Obviously, to see how things are made, which is always, you know, sometimes when you're a kid, you love to see that kind of stuff. But what is behind that and all the data that is behind that is amazing. It's a tidal wave of data. And you don't want to draw and you don't want to scoop it out with just a little cup. You want to be able to take that to your advantage. And that's the approach we're trying to take now.
Very cool. Well, thanks for your time.
Anthony, thank you for having me on.
Thanks for joining us for the latest episode of the Data Masters podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on today's show. And if you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode.